Morning. Today's daf in Bava Metzia is Lamed Tes. Thank the Lubin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is Lona Zeichen Nishmas Liba Gabriela Bashmuel. We are on the very top of Lamed Chesem at Beis, and we are finishing up a discussion in the Gemara. Now, I say finishing up, by the way, the Gemara is not going to change course or direction until tomorrow's daf. Tomorrow's daf is a new Mishnah and a new discussion. Although the Gemara's discussion today will be, for the most part, a continuation of yesterday. Yesterday, what we saw in the Mishnah, Lamed Chesem and Aleph, is the question of being a shomer on perishables. Now, the perishables are, they do what they do. They perish, right? You are given food to watch, and the food's gonna rot. And you were not given instructions of what to do in the event that the owner never said when he's coming back and didn't give you any explicit instructions what to do. And so there you are now with perishables that are perishing. So what do you do? So in the Mishnah, we brought down a machlokes between the Tanakhama and Rosh Hashanah Gamliel. So the Tanakhama says you do nothing. You were given no instructions. You weren't told what to do. You do nothing. You let it rot. And according to Rosh Hashanah Gamliel, he says, no, if you have a chance of salvaging, so you salvage. So you sell it, you do it in front of Beis Din to make sure that the sale is a good sale and that you did everything accordingly. And the language of Rosh Hashanah Gamliel back in the Mishnah was, you are Meshav Aveda. You are like, you're saving somebody's property. So of course what you should do under those circumstances is make an executive decision and sell the rotting produce. Okay, and recoup whatever loss he can. Now, within the Shita of the Tanakhama, so we gave yesterday two explanations. One explanation in the Gemara was that of Rav Kahana. Rav Kahana says, why is your imperative to do nothing? As I pointed out yesterday, Shimon Gamliel makes a lot of sense. So what's the idea behind the Tanakhama? So Rav Kahana says, because typically speaking, people appreciate that which they work for. So the owner worked for that fruit. And yes, the fruit is rotting. And yes, the fruit's value is going to go down to nothing. But he has tremendous sentimental value over that which he worked for. And therefore, even if it reduces to almost nothing, the owner would still want his very own fruit. That is one svara that was given the Gemara. A second svara that was given the Gemara was offered by Rav Nachman Yitzchak. And he said that we have another concern, and that is that maybe what the owner did is that he had a whole bunch of produce of his own in his house. He knew that the shomer was watching other fruit, and so maybe what he did is he designated the fruit held by the shomer as Trumas Maestros on the fruit in his own home. Now, as I mentioned yesterday, I'll just say it again briefly today, it is Shalom and Amukaf. They're not proximate to one another, and you shouldn't be doing that in Hafreshes Trumas Maestros, but Tosos raises that issue, and okay, you shouldn't be doing that, but under certain circumstances you can do it. And that's a concern, and therefore that leaves us with the possibility that the fruit now by the shomer is actually Trumas Maestros. So now you can't sell Trumas Maestros. Well, you certainly can't sell it, let's say, like we said yesterday, you certainly can't sell it to a non-Kohen eating Trumas Maestros, or specifically Truma, that's Misa B'day Shamayim. So you can't sell it to a non-Kohen, and even to a Kohen, according to the Tanakhama, you're not going to sell it. Whereas Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says that no, you are going to sell it. Now, within the opinion of Rav Nachman Yitzchak, the Gemara did acknowledge yesterday, Rav Nachman Yitzchak, who feels that the concern is that the produce may be Trumas Maestros, so therefore you're going to end up selling it to a Kohen, and obviously you're going to not be fetching a good price for that which you for the fruit that which you sold. And then yesterday, just to finish up the review, and then yesterday we saw the Shita of Rav Yochanan. The Shita of Rav Yochanan is that, yes, there's disagreement in the Mishnah, but, says Rav Yochanan, in the event that the rate of depletion is greater than usual, and in terms of what that rate actually is, that's coming up in the Mishnah later on Daf Mem, if the rate of depletion is greater than usual, so then there will be agreement that you should sell and you should recoup the loss. That is the opinion of Rav Yochanan. Then we went further in the Gemara, moving towards the bottom of Lamed Chesem and Aleph, and we brought in a brisa that discussed what happens if you were left with wine, oil, honey, and they all went bad. So what do you do under those circumstances? The Rameir says nothing. Again, like the Tanakhama of our Mishnah. And the Chachamim says, no, you sell them, and you sell them in front of Beis Din. Just make sure that you don't sell them to to yourself. You should sell them to somebody else. Anyway, why the Gemara asked the question yesterday? this question is against Rav Yochanan. If, according to Rav Yochanan, if you're seeing a tremendous rate of depletion, so he believes that there's a firm agreement that you should sell. So over here, you're talking about wine that turns into vinegar. You're talking about oil that goes bad. You're talking about honey that goes bad. So why, according to Rav Yochanan, is there a debate? Rav Yochanan is firmly of the belief that once the rate of depletion is significant, so then everyone says you should sell it. So to that, the Gemara answered, and this is what we got to yesterday. The Gemara says, wine turning to vinegar, honey going bad, oil souring. So there is a diminishment of value, but there's a floor to that diminishment. Meaning, once wine turns into vinegar, that's it. In other words, it doesn't go any worse than vinegar. So it levels off. And since it levels off, so at that point in time, that's why there's a debate between the Tanakama, Rav Meir, and the Chachamim in terms of what you should do. But if the rate of diminishment is such where basically its value is heading towards zero, so then, according to Rav Yochanan, everyone's in agreement that you should sell it. And finally, this is basically where we got to yesterday. We are now on the top of Lamed Ches Amud Beis, and the Gemara says, "V'chachamim omrim." Second line down on Lamed Ches Amud Beis, "V'chachamim omrim moser lahem takano mochrim bebeisdin." According to the Chachamim, you should sell them in Beisdin. Meaning, this is the price that I just reviewed, and this is the Shitas Chachamim, which is that once the wine is heading towards vinegar, you should sell in Beisdin and recoup. My takanti avilu, I'm Ravash. So the Gemara says, well, I don't understand. Once the wine's turning into vinegar, or once, I should say better, it turned into vinegar, so then what would be the point of selling it? Meaning, if it plateaus like the Gemara says it does, so then what's the big deal? So the Gemara says the big deal is that vinegar scent, or I should say odor, aroma, is going to infuse into the barrels, and now, well, it's true, as far as the wine turning into vinegar, there's no longer any more depletion. But what you may end up doing is you may end up losing the barrels. The barrels may getting this aroma, stench, however you want to describe it, of the vinegar, and the barrels then will become unsalvageable. And then the Gemara goes on to explain, but my kamithlagi, the Marsav Lafsimuruba Khashu, Lafsimur Lo Khashu, and the Gemara says, and this is basically the debate between Rav Meir and the Chachamim. Where according to Rav Meir, yeah, it's possible you're going to lose the barrels, but that, in other words, if we're talking about a significant loss, I'm worried about a significant loss. But if we're talking about a small loss, so he says, I'm not worried. And according to the Chachamim, I'm worried about any loss. So by the vinegar, yes, the vinegar is going to level out, meaning once the wine turns into vinegar, it's not going to go down in value. But if we're talking about a possible loss of value to the barrels where the vinegar is in, so, and that is a financial concern, and even though it's a quote-unquote minimal financial concern, but the Chachamim are worried about that as well, and so you should try to salvage that and sell that as well. Okay. Now we go back to our Mishnah, and we return back to the Machlokas in the Mishnah, where you, the Shomer, were left with fruit and no instruction, and you're watching the fruit rot. So again, the Tanakhama says, leave it alone, according to Rav Shimon Gamliel, you sell it. Itmar Rabbi Abba, Rabbi Yaakov, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Halacha ke Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. So the Gemara quotes first in the name of Rabbi Yochanan that the Halacha in fact follows like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, and Rav Amar Rav Nachman, Halacha ke Devir Chachamim. And then the Gemara quotes in the name of Rav Nachman that the Halacha follows like the Chachamim. So in Machlokas Amarayim, who the ruling follows? Vaha Amar Rav Yochanan. The Gemara notes that we have a very consistent approach within Rav Yochanan, which is that he almost consistently is of the opinion that the halacha falls like Rav Shimon Gamliel whenever he's presented in the Mishnah. There are three exceptions to this rule. The Gemara quotes the three exceptions. I'm not going to go through the three exceptions right now. Please forgive me. But there are three exceptions to that rule. This is not one of the three exceptions. So basically what the Gemara is wondering is that we have a general default within Rav Yochanan that the halacha falls like Rav Shimon Gamliel. And really, the only question right now is, why do I need a separate statement over here that Rav Yochanan sides with Rav Shimon Gamliel? So the Gemara's answer, and the Gemara says, okay, it is not a unanimous position within Rav Yochanan that he always feels that the halacha is like Rav Shimon Gamliel. Some Amoraim have a tradition that Rav Yochanan is not always on board with Rav Shimon Gamliel. So if you subscribe to that viewpoint, that's why you needed a separate statement in our Mishnah. Okay. Now, Mid Rav Shimon Gamliel, Nishma, Demarin, and Karvel, Nichtei, Shavui, And now the Gemara is going to take us from this topic of diminishing value of fruit to a related topic, and here pun is intended, to a related topic, which is the following. And this really will take us through the rest of today's daf. Let's say you have a relative, and unfortunately he was taken into captivity, and now his field is unattended. So you have an unattended field. Okay, so what do you do? So basically the analogy is very simple. Just like in our Mishnah, we're talking about the fruit is rotting and you don't know what the owner wanted to do with the fruit, and the machlokis in the Mishnah between the Tanakhama, Rishim, and Gamliel of whether just leave it alone or get involved, meaning do something about it. So here too, in a similar vein, if your relative is taken into captivity and now you have his field and you don't know what he wanted, he gave no instructions of what he wanted to do with that field, so should you intervene and basically take care of the field? And by taking care of the field, we'll talk more specifically about what you're expected to do and what profit, if any, can you take out of the field. This is the Gemara's connection between the Mishnah's discussion and the discussion that we are going to be having for the remainder of today's daf. This goes into today's daf, actually, it even goes into tomorrow's daf as well, a little bit. Rashi says, and the Gemara will make it very clear later on, Karov in this context is anyone who stands to inherit. Okay. The Gemara. Let's start this sentence again. Mid Rav Shimon Gamliel nishma demarid and karov l'nechsei shavui. Now, according to Rav Shimon Gamliel, who is a firm believer in intervention, you take care of the fruit. You recoup the loss of the fruit. So now in this case of your relative who was taken into captivity, so it stands to reason that you are going to take care of the property. Meaning he's a believer in, you'll make executive decisions, you'll intervene in order to save. And according to the Chachamim say, no, you don't intervene. You leave it alone. You weren't instructed to take care of it. You weren't instructed to save the rotting fruit. And here, even though your relative may have wanted the field to take care, being taken care of, but he didn't leave you any specific instructions, and therefore you leave it alone. This is the Gemara's projection that the machlokis between the Tanakh and Rishim and Gamliel in our Mishnah will reflect on this case as well. Umi mai. And the, yes. They believe in a Shavuot Aveda, it's a mitzvah in the Torah.
No, I mean, this case is not a
Shavuot Aveda. No, in other words, this case, it's not your property. In other words, the owner knows where his property is, it's just right now the owner can't tend to it. Okay. So, umi mai. Dilmai kamo kamar Hashem Gamliel hacha elamishim dekakalia karna. The Gemara says, I can, however, see some basic differences between the two cases. Notably, says the Gemara, in the case of our Mishnah, so Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is an advocate of intervention, but you know why? Because if you don't intervene, you're going to lose the principal value of the fruit. So, we're talking about total loss of principal. So there, intervene. But over here, what are we talking about? The field is not going anywhere. You're not going to lose the field. What you'll lose is the harvests of this season, next season, however long he's gone for. You're going to be losing all that potential profit, but that's just profit. It doesn't cut into the principal value. So I can see a very easy discrepancy, a distinction between our mission in that case. And the same thing can be said as far as the sheet of the Tanakhama. Why in the case of the fruit should you leave the fruit untouched, according to our mission, according to the Tanakhama of our mission? So we already went over two different reasons. A, because he worked for it, therefore he is sentimental about it. B, because maybe Shumas Maestros. Avahasam Hachanami Demaridin. Over here, however, neither concern is a concern. We're talking about his property. Certainly the property itself is not Trumas HaMaisos. Certainly there's no idea that he worked for the property, meaning the fruit on the property he worked for. But the property itself is just his property. So the Gemara says, so I can easily make distinctions between the case of the Mishnah and this case. Now, Lamema Detrei Taminenu. So the Gemara says, okay, so basically what you're telling me is that these two machlokas may not be connected. And the reasoning behind these two machlokas may be totally to two different reasons. The Gemara says, but I happen to know, let's follow Shmuel's line of psak. He follows the Rav Shimon Gamliel, meaning in the case of the Shomer, you need to intervene. And he quotes in the name, and we also know in the name of Shmuel, that you do go into your neighbor's property, I didn't mean neighbor, into your relative's property in the event that he's taken into captivity. So intervention. So you see that Shmuel paskins intervention and intervention. So Lamishim Dechad Taimahu. So the Gemara says, I know the conclusion, so now we're just working backwards. Since he concludes in both cases intervention, I'm guessing that Shmuel thinks that the two machloksim are bound by the same reason. The Gemara says, lo, trei tamineinu. So the Gemara says, no, not necessarily. I mean, you only know the conclusion. You don't know the reasons. It could be that the two reasons for these two psakim are two different reasons. Hachinam and Mistar Badam and Rav Amar Rav Nachman. And the Gemara says, and I'll make the case that it's not one reason guiding these two debates. Because let's follow Rav Nachman's train of thought. Rav Nachman, halachi divrei chachamim, in the case of the shomer and the peiros, he goes like the chachamim, don't intervene. Ve'am Rav Nachman marid in karv nechse shavui, and Rav Nachman says regarding the relative, you do intervene. Elo shmamina, trei tamininu shmamina. So the Gemara says, see, according to Rav Nachman, he paskins by the fruit, don't intervene. He paskins up by the property, you do intervene. So you see that according to Rav Nachman, he clearly is of the opinion that there are two different principles guiding these two different debates, and that's why you can paskin in one debate like one way and another debate like another way. Itmar, the Gemara now is going to quote Shavu Shenishba. If you have a relative who was taken into captivity and now his property is unattended to, Rav Amar Eim Morid and Karv Nechsei L'Nechasov. So Rav says you don't go in, you the relative, don't go into the property and take care of the property. Shmuel Amar Morid and Karv L'Nechasov. And Shmuel's of the opinion, you do go. Now, Bishishama Boshameis, now the Gemara, after presenting a machlok between Rav and Shmuel, is going to paint the strike zone. Meaning, where do they debate and where do they not debate? If Shama Boshameis, if you have heard a rumor that the person is died, meaning you don't know this definitively. Now, parenthetically, if you knew it definitively, then there's obviously no conversation to be had. You then become the rightful heir of the property. Discussion over. We are discussing a case where the captive was taken to captivity and kind of don't know what's happening with him. So if there are rumors that are circulating that he died, so everyone's of the opinion that under those circumstances you go and you take care of the field and you work the field and you harvest the field. The and as Rashi points out, so Rashi explains, because well, here's what's going to happen. You heard a rumor that he died, so you don't know it, you don't have witnesses, it's not been confirmed, but it's been reported. Fine. So what you'll do is you'll harvest the land. Now, we'll discuss more in detail as the Gemara unfolds. But right now, let's say it for the first time. And in terms of what will you do with the harvest? Profit sharing. Meaning we'll treat the person taking care of the property like an aris, like a sharecropper. Now, how much does a sharecropper take? The answer is minug, whatever the going rate is. A quarter, a third, a half, whatever the going rate happens to be. So you will be sharecropping on that property. That sharecropping will incentivize you to take very good care of the property. And Rashi points out, if the report is substantiated that the relative died, well, that's fine, because then all that's going to happen is you're going to inherit the property. So, and if once you inherit the property, then you don't need any type of incentivizing. It's yours. The property becomes yours. So the Gemara says, so under those circumstances, there's no debate. Ki pligi b'shalo shama bo shameis. So the only debate between Rav and Shmuel is where the relative was taken into captivity and that's it. That's all the information you know. You don't know anything beyond that. So Rav Amarin Moridin Dama Mafsilahu. So Rav's of the opinion that now, you know he's taken into captivity, but he can come back at any point in time. So now you are taking care of the field, but Rav says, but you're not really going to take care of it, because the unknown of whether or not he's coming back or not, and when he's coming back, is going to always leave you guessing. Maybe he'll come back today, maybe he'll come back tomorrow, who knows? And it's not going to really leave you dedicated to taking care of the property. And you may end up ruining the property, exploiting the property. And Shmuel says, no, we're incentivizing him to take care of the property, because he is going to be sharecropping. He is going to be profit sharing, and he'll take excellent care of the property. So Shmuel, therefore, is of the opinion that he is incentivized to take care of it, and we're going to leave him to take care of it. Meisvei. The Gemara now is going to challenge based on the following braisa. Rav Elazar Amar Mimashma Shenema V'Charapi V'Arakti Eschem. So, the Torah in Parshas Mishpatim describes what's going to happen if you are abusive to widows and orphans. The Torah says that if you are abusive to widows and orphans, so they're going to cry out to me, and the Kadosh Baruch Hu says, and mida keneged mida, I'm going to get angry. V'charapi v'harakti eschem b'cherev, I'm going to allow your death. V'ayunis sheichem l'manos v'nechem yisomen. And what's going to end up happening is your wife will be a widow and your children will be orphans. Mida keneged mida. Pasuk in Mishpatim. Now, the Gemara over here in its drush is going to deal with a very simple question. Once the Torah says Akash Baruch Hu is going to kill you, so then the result, of course, is your wife is going to be widows and your children are going to be orphans. And the Braisa now deals with what seems to be extraneous usage of the language of the Pasuk. Now, just as an interesting aside, it could very well be that the pasuk is just there to explain the mida keneged mida, but the Gemara is going to darshan. V'charapi v'raktes chem yodei ani manos v'neim yisomim elamata malamar v'ayun eshechem malam shenetshosem evakshas enase v'eim enichenoso uv'neim rotzin leired lenichsevim v'eim enichenoso. The Gemara says that what the pasuk is coming to teach us is that it's actually worse than you think. It's not that you're going to die and therefore your wife is a widow and your children are orphans. It's that you're going to die and it's not clear that you're dead. Meaning your wife will be an aguna. She'll want to get remarried, but she can't because she doesn't even know if you're dead. And your children, because we don't actually know that you're dead, your children are going to want to take over the property, but because we don't know that you're dead, therefore they can't even go into the property. Ad kan divrei habraisa. Now, the reading of the braisa would indicate that if there is no knowledge of the father's death, the children cannot take over the property. They can't even go on the property. So I'm a Rava Leire Linkor Tanan. So Rava says, I don't really think the braisa is much of an issue. All the braisa means is that the children can't sell the property. But if the children want to go on the property and work the property and share crop and profit share on the property so they could do so, I don't think the braisa is really that difficult. Have a So there was actually an episode in Naharda where a relative, a father, was taken into captivity, and we don't know what happened after that point in time. And he said, well, look, we just learned a brisa together. And the simple reading of the brisa would indicate that you can't go on the property. So Rav Amram says again, I know that's a simple reading of the brisa, but maybe what the brisa means is that the child can't sell the property, but the child can work the property. So when Rav Sheshis heard this kind of explanation of the Braisa, so he accused Rav Amram, you know, it could very well be that you're from the town of Pumbedisa. It's a great expression the Gemara uses a number of places, and that is, you know what they do in Pumbedisa? They take an elephant and they try to thread him through the eye of a needle. In other words, really, I mean, obviously it's an exaggeration, but really forced pshatim. You're offering such a difficult pshat in the braisa. The simplest reading of the braisa is no, the child can't go on the property, period. Consider, the braisa was talking about your wife can't remarry. What does that mean? She can't slightly remarry? Of course not. What the braisa means is that if she doesn't know that you're dead, she's an aguna. She can't marry at all. So similarly, same thing with the child. If we don't know that you're dead, so the child can't go on the property at all. That's a simple reading of the braisa. Okay. Adkan. Where do we stand right now? the Gemara has launched into a discussion, and we will be on this for the rest of today's daf, has launched into a discussion of what to do in the event that you are taken away, you were taken to captivity, and that's all the information we know. So can somebody now assume responsibility and profit share on the property? And when we say someone, we mean a relative. And more specifically, a relative who stands to inherit the property. So can he now, at least for the time being, until we have more information and confirmation of the death, can he take care of the property and sharecrop in the property? And right now, where we stand in the Gemara, it's a machlokus between Rav and Shmuel. Rav says, no, you can. Shmuel says, yes, you can. The Braisa seems to support Rav's position. You can explain the Braisa, defending Shmuel. And this is where we are in the Gemara. And the Gemara now is going to discuss this at length. At length meaning for the rest of today's daf. We are on the bottom of Lamed Ches Amud Beis, and the Gemara continues its discussion. The Gemara says, really, this is subject to a machlokas tanaim, meaning we had it so far as a machlokas Rav and Shmuel. The Gemara is going to suggest now it actually goes even further back. De Tanya. The Gemara quotes the following brisa: Hayorin lenichse shavui ein motzin oso miyado. V'lo od el afishu afilu shama shem mashmashin uvayim v'kanim v'telosh v'achal harei ze zariz v'niskar. So if you have a relative who is taken into captivity, and you, the relative who stands to inherit, so what you can do is you can go onto the property and you can work the property. Now, it's true, by the way, the Braisa, I'm not giving the simplest reading of the Braisa. The Braisa says, if I could just reread what I just read, Ein motzien oso miyado. We don't take it away from him. But Tosus over here points out, last Tosus on the Amud, that even though that's the Braisa's language, it actually means that you can, lechatchila, go onto the property to take care of the property. And we're going to even go one step further. Not only can you take care of the property, you can profit from all the crop that is grown on the property. In fact, the Braisa goes even one step further. Let's go so far as to say that you hear that he's coming back. So you now know that your allowance to be on your neighbor's property is coming to an end. So what you can do is you can quickly harvest whatever is harvestable, and zariz veniskar. And that's good, meaning because of your excitement and enthusiasm, so you profited as a result of that. And the Gemara then goes on to explain, what do we mean when we say a shavui? It means that your father or your brother or anyone who you stand to inherit goes to Medina Siyam v'shama b'em shemes, and you heard a rumor that they died. Hayored lenichs, I'm sorry, period. Okay, so over here we're now describing not just that the person was taken to captivity, but like we discussed a little bit earlier this morning, but you even heard a report, it's not been confirmed, you don't have two witnesses, but you heard a report that the relative died. Under those circumstances, remember, Rav and Shmuel said they don't debate this issue. The Braisa also is supporting that position, that there's no debate on this issue, everyone's in agreement, that you can assume for the time being the property and reap benefit from all. You're not even profit sharing. You can take all the harvest. Okay. Next, this Braisa is going to deal with three different categories. So we already dealt with category number one, relative was taken to captivity, and rumors are that he died. Case number two, Hayor Lenichsei Nitushin. If let's say your relative abandoned the property. Now I'm using the word abandon over here, but that's not a good translation. You'll see why in just a moment. Motzino Somiyado. So at that point in time, we take the property away from him, the relative, meaning he does not have the right to assume the responsibility and the profit of the property. In this middle category, they went off on a business trip, and we don't know what happened after that point in time. Here's the only thing we do know: they're not here, and they didn't come back. V'amar Rav Shimon Gamliel shamati shanetushin kishvuyim. And Rav Shimon Gamliel says, no, under these circumstances, I think that this second category is to be treated like the first category. Just like in the first category, the relative can go onto the property, work the property, and benefit from the harvest. This too, says Rav Shimon Gamliel, the relative can do the very same thing. That is category number two. And category number three. Hayor l'nichse ritushim. Here, the word is ritushim. The Gemara is going to explain the linguistic distinction between the two. Motzino somiyado. So here in category number three, you cannot go to the property at all. And here there's no debate. You can't. The elay nichse ritushim harishayav v'alach v'alechan min amarishin akan ve'eni yodeh l'echan halchu. So they were here, but we don't know where they went. So, the obvious question the Gemara is now going to deal with is both linguistically and conceptually, what is the difference between case number two and category number three? Category number two, debate whether or not the relative can go into the property. Category number three, no debate. There obviously has to be a difference. We already know the difference in linguistics is nitushim versus ritushim, but the good. And we know they're different words. What are the meanings of these words? And the meaning of these words obviously reflect a basic difference between category number two and category number three. Maishna hani dekari lo ritushim. Sorry, let me start again. Last line of Lamed Ches Amud Beis. Maishna hanach dekari lo ritushim, and maishna hani dekari lo ritushim. So what are the differences between these two words? Nitushim de bal karche. Gemara explains. Nitushim means that you didn't have an option or a choice in the matter. Meaning in category number two, you were evicted from your property for reasons which we're going to articulate better in just a moment. Dechziv, and how do I know that the word nitushim actually means that? Gemara says it's a pasuk in Chumash. V'hashviyis tishamtenu unitashta. You know what happens in the Shemitah year? You're going to abandon your property. What does that mean, you're going to abandon your property? Meaning as if you had a choice in the matter? That's exactly the point. You don't have a choice. Afka asa demalka. Meaning the king, here capital K, the king told you, you're going to be leaving your property. So this is an eviction. By the way, we're talking about Shemitah. In other words, you don't have to actually leave the property. It means that you have to relinquish any type of ownership over the property, any type of rights over the property. But that is instruction to do so. It's not an option. You didn't do so on your own volition. That is what the word netushim means. Ritushim to me da'atan dechsiv em abanim rutasha. And as far as the word ritushim, that means that was a volitional abandonment of the property. The Gemara quotes a pasuk from Hosea. Rashi spends an extensive amount of time going over the actual language of the word ritushim. See Rashi for a good grammar discussion. So let's just quickly organize the information. Category number one, your relative was taken into captivity and rumors are reported that he died. It is not confirmed, but rumors are reported that you died. Under those circumstances, category number one of the Braisa, you, the relative who stands to inherit the property, can now go to the property, work the property, harvest the property, and the simple reading of the Braisa is get all benefit from the harvest. Category number two, where the owner was forcibly removed from his land, will be more specific of examples in just a little bit. Forcibly removed from his land, under those circumstances, the relative may he or may he not work the property. That's a machlokus between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Tanakhama says no, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says yes. And we're going to qualify that yes in just a minute. And then finally, category number three, where the owner of the land on his own leaves the land, was not removed from the land, but just simply abandons his own property, the relative cannot assume any kind of sharecropping role on the property. Gemara continues. We are on the top of Lamed Tes Amud Aleph. Tana, v'kulan shamanu ka'aris. In all these cases, he's to be treated like a sharecropper. Now the Gemara says, let's be very specific. Ahaya. Which case are we talking about? Ilam Ashvuyan, Hashazar Viniskar Hava, Maida Ashkach Mibaye. That can't be talking about category number one. Category number one, it was very clear in the Braisa that the relative who is now assuming the responsibility of harvesting can benefit from the entire crop. He's not profit sharing. Ella aretushim. So the Gemara says, so maybe it's not category number three. The Gemara says, but we know that's not true as well. Category number three, you can't even go on the property. That's been established in category number three, no debate. Ella anetushin. So it must be in category number two. But the Gemara says, even there, let's see if we can fit this point into category number two. Laman ilam the rabban hamri motzino samiyado. According to the Chachamim, Chachamim are of the opinion that if the person, even if the person was removed from his property, the relative cannot come into the property and harvest the property. And here in Shem Gamliel, Ha'amashamati Shanatushin Kishvuyim. Now you know, according to Rabbi Shem Gamliel, he says that Natushim are to be treated like Shvuyim, meaning he equates category number two and category number one. And in category number one, you don't have to profit share. You can get all the profit. So the Gemara says, "Kishvoyim v'lo shvoyim, kishvoyim den motzino som yado v'lo shvoyim di ilohasim zars v'niskar v'ilohacha shaymin alei ka'aris." So the Gemara qualifies, and the Gemara says like this: in category number two, within the opinion of Rishim and Gamliel, even though he says that the category number two is like category number one, it's not to create a full equation, but, you know, in other words, if you like your math, it's not the equal sign, but it's the approximate sign, meaning they're similar, not the same. And in other words, in category number one, you can, where the rumor is that your relative died, so you can take over the property and you can gain all profit from the property. In category number two, according to Rishim and Gamliel, where you don't know his whereabouts, he was forcibly extracted from his property, but you don't have any more information, according to Rishim and Gamliel, you can now assume working the property, but, you only are going to profit share, you're not going to get all the profit. Okay, just as an interesting aside, it's not an aside, it's more in the Gemara, which I'm just going to mention, but I'm not going to go into, is what happens to the other percentage of produce. Meaning if you're profit sharing, so that you're only getting, again, what, a quarter, a third, a half, whatever the going sharecropping rate is. So that means then that there could be at least a half, possibly more, of produce that is going to, what's going to happen to that? So Rashi, Tosfos, the first Tosfos on the Samud, discuss that very issue. Okay, Umayishna mehadidna. The Gemara says, let me ask you a question. Now it comes out that according to Rav Shimon Gamliel, if you have a property where the owner is absent, and we're talking about category number two, which means that he was evicted, so we have just established that, according to Rav Shimon Gamliel, so you can go into the property, harvest, and profit share. And you'll take a sharecropper's percentage of the harvest. How is this any different than marriage? Now, to be totally clear, what the Gemara means by that is, in a marriage, when a woman gets married, so her nichsei maluk property is owned by her, but the husband is able to eat the peros. He can eat the fruit of that field. We've discussed this time and again in terms of the contractual financial obligations between a husband and wife, and a wife and her husband. And one of them is that her property will be still under her name, the title will be still under her name, but all produce, all payers go to the husband. And here's what we learned in the Mishnah Ksuvos. Hamotzi otzalos anechze ishto otzi harbe v'achal kima kima v'achal harbe masha otzi hotzi masha achal achal. In terms of the husband and his usage of his wife's property, there is no balance sheet. You threw a ton of money into the property and you only got a couple of fruit out of it. Okay? If you threw a little bit of money and you got a ton of fruit out of it, once again, okay. Meaning there simply is no balance sheet on that property. You work it, you benefit from it, and there's no sharecropping. There's no profit sharing. There's no balance sheet. So the Gemara says, what's the difference? The Gemara says, even the question is kind of strange. Meaning the difference is that in the case of a husband and wife, hopefully that relationship will last. Meaning from the husband's perspective, this property is always going to be in this status of title under my wife's name and I get to keep the produce. So there's no balance sheet because it's... Yes, it's a financial arrangement, but no, it's not a business arrangement. Over here, we're talking about taking care of your relative's property, and he may or may not come back. You don't know. We have to incentivize him to take care of the property, and if that means that he's going to profit share, fine. That's going to be an incentive, because consider that from his standpoint, he doesn't know how long he's going to be working the land. Maybe a year, maybe a day, maybe 10 years. We don't know. He doesn't know. That's why we have to incentivize him. And the Gemara makes exactly this point. If you want to make any comparison, compare it to the following. A minor girl gets married, not by her father, but either by her brother or by her mother, which the Chachamim allowed, and not only allowed, they instituted that such a marriage can be done. But under this very unusual arrangement, she can be memayin. She can annul the marriage when she turns 12. Gemara and Yevamos discussed this extensively. Now, here you have an unusual scenario in which a husband's married to a woman, but with the possibility of the marriage dissolving when she turns 12. This is now an analogous scenario, where the husband now is responsible for his wife's property, but he doesn't know if this arrangement is going to last. And what do we see under those circumstances? Balance sheet. There, the husband can actually record how much he put into the land, how much he's getting out of the land. There, we're going to treat it like a business arrangement. Exactly for the same reason that our case over here. Because you don't know if this will continue or not. And the Gemara says, exactly. Exactly for this reason, we are going to arrange it so that he can profit share. Just like in our case over here. Now, the Gemara says that we're going to be treating him like a profit, like a sharecropper. Okay, we quoted this b'risa already on the top of the Amud. We're quoting the b'risa again. Right now, the Gemara is focusing on the kulan. In all circumstances, now we already know that the word kulan does not mean all. Actually, it's limited. It's only category number 2, and it's only the opinion of Rosh Shimon Gamliel. So, to which the Gemara now then asks the question. My lasuye. So if it's only category number 2 and it's only according to Rosh Shimon Gamliel, what's the language of the brisa of Vikulan? So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Shmuel, Shavu Shenishma, Maridin Karv L'Nechasov, Yatzal Ladas, Maridin Karv L'Nechasov. So the Gemara says it comes to discuss the following. A statement made by Shmuel, which is that if somebody was taken to captivity, the relative goes into the property and works the property. However, if he's Yotze Ladas, so then the relative does not go into the property. Now, Rav Nachman dite amar boreach hareihu kishavui. Now, Rav Nachman himself says, I'm of the opinion that if you are fleeing the property, that is considered like taken into captivity. Now, the Gemara says, now, what does that mean? Boreach machmas mai. What do you mean he's running away? Ilema machmas karga haino ladas. What do you mean? Let's imagine that the tax collector is coming. And the owner of the property hears that the tax collector is coming. And he says, now would be a great time to take a vacation. And so he goes and he leaves town because of the impending arrival of the tax collector. That's not like being taken into captivity. That is a volitional retreat from the property to avoid taxes. That obviously is not what we're talking about. Ela barech machas mardin. It means the following. It means that rumor circulated that you committed murder. Under Persian rule, you will be put to death. Right, Rashi reminds us of the Gemara we saw at the end of Baba Kama, right, with Rav Kahana. So the Persians will put you to death for even there weren't witnesses. In other words, but once you are accused of murder, the Persians are going to put you to death. So under those circumstances, you now flee. That's not considered a volitional vacation. That's something where basically, like being taken to captivity, you're basically running for your life. Under those circumstances, that, Rav Nachman says, is a scenario in which, even though no one actually extracted you from the property, but we're going to treat that as if somebody extracted you from the property, and therefore the relative is allowed slash encouraged to now go onto the property to take care of the property. The Gemara quotes, in the name of Shmuel, let's have the following scenario. The relative is taken into captivity. But right now, there's no work to be done to the land. All the work was done already. Now, it's just harvest. So basically, we're now talking about the relative's opportunity for no work, all profit. The Gemara says, in the name of Shmuel, no. We're not going to just simply allow the relative to come onto the property and just take all that produce. In fact, here's what we're going to do. We will have a apotropos of Beis Din. Umamidim, I'm going to read this again. Just all these different types of harvests. Beis Din Yordan Lenechasov, Umamidim apotropos. So then Beis Din is going to appoint a apotropos of Beis Din. Coats their boats, their goat, their mosaic, and harvest. V'acharkach, Moridin Karav Lenechasov. So, and then afterwards, now we say to the relative, okay, now, from this point going forward, you want to work the land, and you want to share crop and profit share. Now you have the option of doing so.
What happens to what?
I assume, right. So I assume it's sold and the money is then held in escrow. But the Gemara doesn't say that, and I'm making that assumption. Okay, so to be fair, v'lukim apotropos la'olam. So the Gemara says now, as long as you have the apotropos there, why not keep him there? So the Gemara says, "Apotropos daikanini lo mokmina." Gemara says, "Here's our rule," and you probably noticed this throughout Shas, but the Gemara over here says it explicitly. You know, the only time we appoint an apotropos is only for a minor. We don't appoint apotropos for adults. So over here, for a temporary measure, so that we get to salvage all the harvest that wasn't harvested. So for that temporary measure, we'll do so. But to instate him as a permanent apotropos of somebody else's, of an adult's property, the Gemara says, we do not do that. Am Rav Huna. Ein moridin katan l'nechse shavui, v'lo karav l'nechse katan, v'lo karav machmas karav l'nechse katan. Three rules of Rav Huna, and we'll conclude today with the three rules of Rav Huna. Rule number one. Ein moridin katan, I'm just reading ahead in the Gemara, because the Gemara is going to explain each one of them. Ein moridin katan l'nechse shavui. Okay, so rule number one is that we don't allow a minor relative to take care of the property. Now, that's easy to explain. He's a child. Right? The Gemara says, Dilma mafsid lahu. He doesn't know how to take care of a property. So even though he's a relative, and even though he stands to inherit the property, but because he's a child, we don't allow him to take care of it because he's a child. And he won't take care of it. And just the opposite. He'll ruin the property. V'lo karav machmas karav l'nechse katan. Now we are moving on to the third halacha of Rav Huna. I don't know why the Gemara went out of order over here, but either way, we're going to end up explaining all three anyway. The third rule of Rav Huna is that we don't have a relative taking care of a relative for the property of a minor. Gemara goes on to explain, be'ache me'ima, we're talking about the maternal brother. And Rashi explains this a lot better. What it means is as follows. Let's say that the minor's father just jumped out of town, and now his uncle, meaning his father's paternal brother, is there now. Now, he is not allowed to take care of the property for reasons which we're about to articulate. We haven't said it yet, but he can't take care of the property. What about your uncle's maternal brother? Which means, I know when we do this family stuff, it's always confusing. But that means now that it's your father's brother, but not related to you. It's your uncle's brother, but he's not related to you. And that could easily be in a scenario where it's your uncle, but only because it's your father's paternal brother. And then it could be that he has separate from that another maternal brother who simply is not related to you in any way. So, objectively, he's an outsider. That's objectively. On the other hand, he's your uncle's brother. So the Gemara says, because of that family relationship, He cannot take care of the property. And why not? So let's go ahead. And the Gemara then concludes by saying, and you know, why is it that a relative cannot take care of a minor's property? Answers the Gemara, because of the following. You see, when the relative starts taking care of the property of a minor, so the kid literally has, or in other words, the kid's father's out of town, and we don't know what happened to him. And he was, right, let's put this in category number two, right? He was extracted, and after that, we just simply don't know what happened. You see, if we allow a, let's say, an uncle, or an adult relative to simply take care of the property, what's going to end up happening is that because he's a relative, what he may end up claiming is that, you know, kid, I got to tell you, the property really belongs to me. Meaning, you notice since your childhood, I've been taking care of this property, and he's going to lay a claim to the property, and because at the time the kid was just a kid, so the kid doesn't know how to contest that kind of claim because he simply didn't know any better. So the Gemara says, because of that, if what was left was a property that was owned by a minor, we simply don't allow a relative to take over for fear, for concern that the relative may exploit the situation and then end up laying claim to the property. Okay, stop over here. Tomorrow we'll pick it up from Amarava.